Are you ready, Alabama?
Hello? What, who's there? What's going on?
It's time to enter the doghouse.
Whatever's happening here, just knock it off.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
These kids are weird, man. They're weird.
Live from the Big Dog Production Studios.
I don't.
It's the Tom Abraham Show.
That might be listed in Revelations as the cause for the apocalypse.
Here he is, the head of the household, the Big Dog.
You're the smartest guy ever.
Tom Abraham.
You want me to do this crap?
I guess I'm on here. Am I on? Can somebody respond?
And good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Reaction Monday here in the doghouse. Now just 11 days. That's right, just 11 days until kickoff of the college football season. That's right, coming up on this Saturday, we will have True Blue College football. I'm talking about Power 5 teams playing college football, all right, this Saturday. Don't let anybody fool you. Yes, it's 18 days until Alabama and Auburn get going, 20 days for UT. But this Saturday, we've got about five or six college football games. Speaking of college football, Jared Stidham has officially been named the quarterback for Auburn. Everybody saw that coming. Tennessee hasn't made a decision yet. And Alabama, according to Nick Saban, was choppy offensively in their first scrimmage on Saturday. We'll have much more on that a little bit later on in the show. Plenty to get to, though, on this Reaction Monday off the events of the weekend. We had more scrimmages across the SEC. We had more NFL scrimmages as well. We had some terrific golf by former Crimson Tider Justin Thomas winning the PGA Championship yesterday in a great finish. And speaking of great finishes, a thrilling finish at Michigan International Speedway, aided by a couple of cautions. Thank God for that. Of course, the much bigger picture was the horrific events that took place in Charlottesville, Virginia, which has only served to further split Americans on political and racial lines. Now, please don't fall for that crap. Don't fall for it. I mean, there's a lunatic fringe that's been around for a long, long time. And to associate what lunatics do, on whether it's far right or far left, with Donald Trump or Barack Obama or anybody else, is just it's just ridiculous. It's uneducated. All right? There's always going to be that lunatic fringe. It's always going to be there. Look, Jim Jones. Anybody remember Jonestown? David Koresh in Waco? They led cults in the name of Jesus Christ, bastardizing the Bible. They said they were doing all that stuff in the name of Jesus. Donald Trump is no more responsible for what David Duke has to say at that rally than Barack Obama was for Muslim terrorists. We just can't generalize like that. And my goodness gracious. The beating that guy took over not saying by saying we've got to do away with hate on all sides. He's right. Now, yes, this may be something that was prodded on and led by these neo-Nazis. No question about it. But what about the lunatic that shot four cops in Dallas? So when he says on all sides, that's all he meant. On all sides. You got whack jobs on all sides. Stop it. I ended up in a very heated discussion with one of my very best friends who happens to be African American over the weekend about this thing. And this is exactly what they're trying to do. Split this country up. Anyone who is educated, anyone who's in a skin deep, man. Skin deep. I mean, peel it back or it's all the same. My problem is with the way people act. It's not with the way the color of their skin. And you know, it's the same thing with this, with Marshawn Lynch, and, you know, going to sit during a national anthem, and now and the Bennett guy, Michael Bennett, out in Seattle, and how he's going to, you know, how does that unify anybody? You know, I want to bring awareness. Everybody's aware. Do something that shows unity. Grab a white guy and put your arms arm in arm. A white guy, grab a black guy on the sideline during the national anthem and lock arms. Show that to people. Stop, man. It's so stupid. And this is what they're exactly what they're trying to do. Dog, I got to take a statue down. Oh, okay. Should we, you know. We talked last week about a story that 50 greatest black athletes of all time. We have a black coaches association. What if we had a white coaches association? How would that go? Wouldn't go good. So just stop it. If you don't want to divide things on racial lines, stop dividing things on racial lines. All the way across the board. All right. That's all I got to say about that. On to the sports. How about Justin Thomas? Third straight 20-something American. That's what I'm about. I'm about Americans. Now, if you want to do something to me, that's the thing. I'm about Americans. I love when Americans are dominated in sports. Third straight 20-something American to win a major this summer following Brooks Koepka and Jordan Spieth. Thomas started out shaky but made a clutch putt for a bogey on one and followed that with a birdie on two. But this deal looked like it was headed for a playoff for sure at one point when the leaders, with the leaders having just six holes left, it was a five-way tie for the lead at 7-under. It was like restrictor play golf. And then all of a sudden, all at the same time, I'm talking about in real time within 5 minutes, in the same time, four out of the five made bogeys and Justin Thomas stood on the 13th tee as the sole leader. And then he went to work at one point building a three-shot lead until making a smart bogey on 18 for the two-shot win. What's nuts is Thomas is 150 pounds soaking wet carrying his bag, and that dude averaged 320 yards off the tee. I don't even know how you do that. And there was that nice shot of Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler and some of the other contemporary players were on the 18th green pulling for Thomas. On the one hand, this is very classy. This is very Ryder Cup-ish, very golfish. But on the other hand, I mean, did Jack and Ernie and Lee and Tom Watson and Phil and Tiger do that? I mean, they were cordial to each other. They were nice to each other, you know, afterwards and stuff. But I'm mixed on this. Tiger didn't hang around pulling for other guys to win tournaments. If he lost, he was pissed. And I can guarantee you that Jack and Ernie didn't do that. And Jack Nicklaus wasn't standing behind the green at the in the 68 U.S. Open pulling for Lee Trevino and giving him a big hug when he came off the... He was ticked. I'm mixed. What I'm not mixed about is the move that Kyle Larson pulled off during that green-white checkers finish at Michigan. I mean, much of the race was ho-hum. And then they had a restart a few laps before the final caution, and Martin Truex had just flat checked out. I mean, they weren't even showing the front of the field. They're just like showing a battle for 10th. Then after a wreck with like five laps to go, Larson restarted in the second row. He split the Toyota teammates, Truex and Eric Jones, on the restart. He went four wide through the first turn. It was pretty cool stuff. It was Larson's third straight win at Michigan. He left with his balls in a wheelbarrow. I mean, that was just gutsy. Big time gutsy move. All right, if you got an idea of what you want to contribute to the show, I invite you to get in toll free 866-485-WUMP, 866-485-9867. We also have the entire digital doghouse for you as well that consists of the Twitter feed at Tom Abraham Show. Throw us a follow there. Facebook fan page, throw us a like at Facebook.com/ Tom Abraham Show. Then there's the text window, 7329 TA Show, 732-982-7469. Doghouse inbox is open as well, Tom at TomAbraham.com. Follow the ump on Twitter at umpsports. Check out our website, umpsports.com. And the Facebook page is Facebook/umpsports. PGA Tour insider Stephen Gribben is in the lead today with reaction to the PGA Championship. At the top of the three, Damon Amendolara, CBS Sports Radio, is in. Talk a little bit about that fantastic Country Hardball weekend. He is followed by Mark Long from the AP in North Florida on the Florida Gator suspensions, including Antonio Callaway. Not our Antonio. He didn't get suspended. Antonio Callaway. Some people think it's time for Jim McElwain just to cut bait with that kid. We'll explain what the kids did. It was stupid. It's not unlike something that happened at Alabama in 2007, to be honest with you. It was also something that, and I'm not an apologist for it, but it's also something that, you know, maybe if they threw just a little bit of jingling, just a little bit of jingling at these kids, maybe they wouldn't have to, you know, sell electronics that they buy with their scholarship money. Well, we'll get to that with Mark Long. In the four, Jordan Bianchi of SB Nation talks NASCAR with us. Teresa Walker of the AP is in as well, coming off the Titans after they opened up their preseason with a rather uneventful game in New York against the Jets. And we are chasing our friend David Basil on the Frank Broyles passing away. I don't know if you just saw that or not, but Frank Broyles, not an SEC legend, but Arkansas is an SEC team now. He's a Southwestern Conference legend, really. But still, he's a college football legend. Frank Broyles and David Basil played for Frank Broyles, and he also is the founder of the Broyles Award for the outstanding assistant coach in the country. And if we can track down David, we'll have that for you. Titans game. That O-line, mostly the backups, were abused in that deal, yet the Jets only managed a 7-3 win. I did think that Christian Hackenberg looked pretty good for New York, and Alex Tanny did not for the Titans. Remember, though, he's the third stringer. Marcus Mariota played 8 snaps. Matt Castle's the backup. They want to see what Alex Tanny's got to see whether or not he can rise to being a backup or what the story is there with that guy. What really miffed me was the personal foul on Jarrell Casey on the Jets' first possession on a 3rd and long, which kept that drive going and led to the Jets' only score. I'm not sure what else a guy can do there. He had gotten around behind the quarterback and just cleanly reached up and tackled him at the calves, at the shins. I know you're not supposed to, quote, hit the quarterback below the knees, but we see that all the time. It wasn't like he dove at his knees. He was on the ground and just wrapped him up. I don't know what you do there. And then 2 possessions later, Alex Tanny thinks he's Batman after taking a helmet to the chin, looking out his ear hole, staggers off the field, and nothing is called. Same white hat. Don't get it. That dude over there behind the curtain playing the stacks of wax and platters, and answering the phones, pushing the buttons, making sure that we stay on the air in our palatial ump studios. He's one part Mexican. He's one part Italian. He's one part mutt. His family calls him Antonio Macbeth. And when it came time for us to hire a new producer for the Tom Abraham Show,
there was no doubt about who I was going to hire. Didn't interview anybody, didn't talk to anybody, just hired a guy.
Tony Mac!
Chico, don't be discouraged. The man, he ain't so hard to understand.
Kiss my brown ass.
Do you know who I am?
Who in the blue hell are you?
I'm the producer of this show. If I didn't step up, you're nowhere. I put this thing together out of spit and polish.
The guy's an intern.
You don't ever say that to me. Bullcrap.
I don't care how many Dago, Guinea, what, greaseball, goombas come out of the woodwork.
All those of you that know Italians and like Italians, this is your day.
But don't ever take sides with anyone against the family again.
You can't speak Italian just because you have a mustache.
How come there ain't no Puerto Ricans on Star Trek?
When you ask me those kind of questions, it really pisses me off.
Hey, I don't want your money touching my money.
What's the matter?
I don't want your money in the same way.
My money's no good no more. Why?
Why? Because you're all jinxed.
I don't know how to say this, so I'm going to choose my words very carefully. I think you're a psycho.
Now, Tom. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Tom. Hey, Tom. Hey, Tom. Hey, Tom.
Oh, hey, Tom. Hey, Tom.
Tom, can you get me off the hook? For old time's sake.
You ask a question every week that I don't know anything about.
It should be a friggin' investigation.
We love you. We love you forever and ever.
Say hello to my new friend.
Hey, 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 T-Mac, how you doing today?
Big Dog, I'm fantastic. I like that new soundbite you had in there about when it was time for me to be hired and step up. No interview, no nothing. You're right, but it was kind of like being called up into the major leagues because, you know how they always say, well, yeah, so-and-so was called up. So I got a phone call from you. You got a phone call telling me what to expect and what you expect of me. So that's kind of what I equate that to.
Grumpy says, judging by the game, the Titans' offensive line is not the best in the NFL, more like the 20th best. How many sacks did they wind up giving up? They gave up about 7 or 8. But the starters, Grumpy, and everybody else out there, the starters only played 8 snaps, 10 snaps to offensive line. They played very, very little with the starters. Okay, so that, you know, so if you want to say that they're depth, okay. You know, it's so hard in these games. Saying that, their offensive line is top five. I wouldn't say best in the league. They're a top five offensive line. They're starters.
Definitely. Okay. And my question, you mentioned the depth, and it's so hard to gauge what they're doing, especially in the first preseason game. The starting offensive line, I mean, they also didn't look great, but like you said, they played 8 snaps. They know they're not going to play that much. I doubt the motivation was there.
It's not about motivation. There's no game plan.
Right.
You're motivated. Anytime you go out on the field, you're motivated. I mean, you better be motivated and ready to play. You know what? You had number 8 behind you. You better be damn motivated.
But right, like on that,
for example, on that first play, when he rolls out, it looked like he got flushed by the offense. Well, yesterday, Mike Mularkey in his press conference said that was designed. They wanted him to run. They wanted to see him run on that leg. You know what I mean? So that was a design thing. He did not get flushed and then have to bail out of the pocket or anything like that. So it's tough. I mean, look, judging anything by this is like saying that DeShone Kizer and Mitchell Trubisky are going to, you know, face off against each other in the Pro Bowl. You know what I mean? Because of the way they looked the other night. You just can't do anything with it. And I'll be totally honest with you. The more I see these games, the more I think we should have 2 and that's it. I don't know why we have a quarter of a season worth of preseason games. I mean, think about it. It's a quarter of a season. Why do we have that? They play, you know how many they play in college? None. You know how many scrimmages they have in college against other people? None. So why do we got to have a quarter of a season to get ready for an NFL season? I mean, these things are, you know, they really are way, way overstated. And you're seeing it more and more. You're seeing less and less guys playing them. It's such a ripoff. And I'm glad that the people aren't showing up. I mean, they got the tickets. But my gosh, I mean, 7-3? I mean, if I'd have had a root canal scheduled that night, I'd have definitely gone for that. I mean, that was brutal to watch. It was next to him. Luckily, I was watching. Well, my problem was I wanted to watch the Yankees and the Red Sox too, but the Red Sox jumped the Yankees behind Andrew Benintendi that night, a former SEC player of the year out of Arkansas, hit 2 3-run homers against the Yankees, and the Yankees were getting whacked. So I was stuck watching the Titans playing a 7-3 game. I mean, it was awful. It was awful.
Pitiful.
But, T-Mac, I do have some new ads to the Saban board. I was able to get some new ads to the Saban board yesterday or Saturday night after the scrimmage, somebody asked a question about, it had to do with there being like skirmishes. It was a hot day. Were there fights and everything else? And, you know, was there extra competition going on? And Saban he couldn't get his arms around the question the guy was asking him.
Why don't you rephrase the question and just ask what you want to ask?
No, that was
whatever it is. Or maybe you want to tell me something.
No, that was a different one. That was last year. He just this was Saturday.
You know, my feeling is, and I don't understand exactly what you're asking me.
I mean, he starts being like, my feeling is, I don't even know what the hell you're talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, those are classic. You're gonna have to keep those. I know you're gonna
keep
use
those.
You're gonna use those often.
It's when Danny T calls.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know. When Doc calls.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know. How do I know? All right. What I do know is that I'm going to learn something right now because that's what happens when T-Mac rolls the menu.
Oh, yeah. Love hearing that music. We're going to start in 1936 when the first Olympic basketball game ever was played, and that was in the Berlin Games. So
my daddy wasn't even born then.
1987, Oakland A's Mark McGwire sets a rookie home run record at 39. He goes on to end the season with 49 home runs as a rookie.
It's interesting that you open with the Nazi Olympics. That's the famous Hitler Nazi Olympics, yeah, coming off of Charlottesville and those clowns.
1993, appealing to all audiences, yeah, you know what I mean? 1993, Reggie Jackson Day. The Yankees retired Jackson's number 44 jersey. You want to know what number that... I guess I should put that differently because it was his number 44 jersey, but that, yeah, was the Yankees' 13th jersey retirement.
That's all? Are you sure?
In 1993, that was our 13th.
Oh, okay. They got to have 20, at least, yeah, 20-something retired.
And 1994, Nick Price shot a 269 at Southern Hills in Tulsa, wins the 76th PGA Championship, his first of three majors. And birthdays today. Let me tell you something. These might be the two best birthdays, two most star-studded birthdays, most popular birthdays we've had on the Manouche in a while. Yeah. We're going to start at 1987. Fan favorite, Tim Tebow was born. Tebow's 30 today.
It's Tebow's birthday today?
Yeah.
He's 30? Well, we only have him for a few more years, right? 33. He's got to go back to his father.
And in 19...
He'll ascend. See, he didn't get that. He didn't get to see an ascend. He's going to ascend back to heaven when he's 33, when the carpenter died. Anyway, go ahead.
1950...
That's a Jesus joke right there, but go ahead.
1959, Irving Magic Johnson was born. 58
years old, man.
It's Tebow time. Let's get going.
He's got to get going, man. He's got to get to the majors. I tell you what, they're gonna have to call him up.
We can't just wait and wait for the opportunities. We got to do it now.
Now, we just can't wait. That's Tebow talking about getting called up.
We can't just wait and wait for the opportunities. We got to do it now.
Now, I guarantee you, he's going to the New York Mets in September.
How awesome would it be? Like you mentioned, at 33, he's gonna get called back up to his father, yeah, Jesus. How awesome, yeah, would it be? He hits a walk off homer, and as he's rounding third, he ascends to touch home plate.
He says, "I'm going home," and then he goes home. He touches home plate and then ascends directly into heaven.
A beautiful, ominous light touches home plate, and he runs into it and just disappears. His jersey neatly folded on home plate.
I love Tebow. I just love Tebow. All right, trying to figure out where I want to go. Let me get Wolverine Dan in here right away because I know he's excited about how his Detroit Lions, like, although they lost their starting defensive end for the season with an Achilles injury. I mean, that's much bigger deal than winning that football game, is losing their starting defensive end for the season. Wolverine Dan, welcome in. How are you?
Before I get on that, I'll get on right away. He's not the starting. We got Ziggy Pop. I call him Ziggy Stardust. He didn't even play. He's our starting defensive end. Come on.
Well, no, this is the other starting defensive end. You got two.
Don't worry about it. I'll get to that game in a minute. First off, your monologue when you started with division is country, you are spot on, my friend. It's time to stop dividing. This media divides, and these other people divide us. Don't listen to those weenies. They're a small percent. They're kookbats, nutballs, greaseballs, whatever you want to call them. You know.
Oh, wait. They're not greaseballs. Don't call them greaseballs. They're not greaseballs. I mean, greaseballs are... They're Italians. I mean, I'm one. I'm a greaseball, so don't call them greaseballs. Those guys are... I don't even know what those guys are.
Yeah. All right. Well, they're crazy. They're out of their freaking mind, all right? Bottom line is, there's more of us and less of them. They should get their own island and move on it.
But let me just say that before you get off of that. Because the one thing is that everybody's piling on that, and then everybody's crushing the president because he said on all sides that they are absolutely 100% lunatics, but they're what I call the lunatic fringe. And we have that same thing on the other side, on both sides. I mean, we have hate coming out of both sides here. Now, there's 80% of us that are in the middle that want to just get along with everybody, and it understands that skin color is meaningless. But there's 10% way over there, not even, probably 3% that are way over there, and another 3% that are way over there. All right, people killing themselves, and there's lunatics all the way around. This isn't something that is owned just by neo-Nazis, all right? We got lunatic, hateful people on both sides. That's all I want to say about that. Go ahead.
Well, you know, 80% of us want to live by the conduct of our character, not the color of the skin. Who said that? Yeah, we all know. Now, let's get to the football here. Bottom line, oh my gosh. So excited. My whole family was there. I had all the eats out, all the munchies, all the drinks. Unbelievable. Those uniforms, Tom, are unbelievable. Oh, what they're missing, Tom, is the Lions. The lion with the stripes down the middle of the line on the helmet. Oh, they did that. I got a hat. My wife bought me one for this game here. It's got the old 56 Lions logo. Unbelievable. Let's get on the game here. Number one, defense, breaking the pocket down, rushing the crap out of these quarterbacks. Linebackers, studs, rookie Davis from Florida starts the game. And I tell you what, Legion of Doom, man, we're starting to pound people already. I love this enthusiasm when it comes to this defense, and they're playing out of their mind, okay? Now, let's get on the offense, okay? Oh, my, Rudick, should I say a la Tom Brady? A low draft choice from Michigan, and nobody wanted the kid. And you see, he's got wheels, man. He runs out of the pocket. Poison the pocket, throws the ball nice. Unbelievable. What a backup. And then the rookie. Oh, Galladay. Oh, Tommy, I'll tell you, this bet's looking pretty good right now. I know it's only the first preseason, Tom, but you must admit, there was a lot of good things. If you did watch the game, you probably didn't, but there was a lot of good things happened with this team yesterday. Don't you agree?
First preseason game. I mean, it's the first preseason game. Oh, I mean, right. Yeah, it's better to look good than to look bad. There's no question about it, but, I mean, it's the Browns look great, too. You know what I mean? It's not a precursor. Do you remember I hate to say this, but do you remember when the Lions went 5-0 in the preseason?
Yeah, remember don't that mention year? It, okay? I know.
You know what happened after they went 5-0 in the preseason, right?
Hey, easy, buddy, okay? Now you're starting to make me feel bad. I was on a natural.
I know, and I got to tell you, I didn't like the uniforms as much as I hoped. You know, tell me the truth right now. The Barry Sanders uniform or that uniform? You couldn't see the numbers. I didn't like the light blue stripes on the helmet. I like the lion itself. I like the pants. But I did not. You can't see the numbers on the uniforms from far away. You got it only in the close-up shot. You can't. I would have rather have the white with the two blue on the helmet. The Barry Sanders uniforms were the best uniforms they've ever had, and I wish they would just go back to that.
Well, you know, I don't know about that. I was thoroughly impressed with what I saw. I mean, and they had been putting WCF on one side and the Lions on the other. I thought that was a class move.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, I tell you, the only guy that disappointed me was the kicker. You know, that guy, boy, he hit that line drive 50-yarder. Didn't even get over the upright, for crying out. That little disappointment. But you know what? I know your first preseason game, Tom, but you got to see my voice. I'm excited. I'm always excited. But what I see here was just the third. I thought they played a really good game.
Yeah. All right, man. I appreciate you. Better to look good than to look bad. There's no question about that. I appreciate you.
All right. See you later.
All right, bye. I'm not going to get too excited. My team look good, too. It's better to look good than look bad in the preseason. All right, let's get a break. When we come back, Stephen Gribben starts things off for us. We'll do that right after this. It's the Tom Abraham Show. 730-1039. The Hump.
Call 866-485-9867 to get your bark on. Here he is, the head of the household, the big dog, Tom Abraham.
All right, welcome back, Tom Abraham Show. Stephen Gribben is getting a kidney stone removed. So, needless to say, he's out. Does anybody know how Cole did this morning with his procedure? Did you hear anything, T-Man?
I texted him and told him I hope everything went well. He said all is well. So, he said it went pretty good. Today's his recovery day, so.
Okay, so does he get to come back on tomorrow, or what's his? Has he got to lay low for a little bit? He had a little procedure done on his back. He's had some terrible back pain. Did he get it? So, what do we know about that?
Well, usually whenever I text Cole, I get one word responses. So,
right.
I'm assuming he'll be back tomorrow. I asked him what his recovery time was. He said today. So I'm assuming he'll be back tomorrow.
Oh, so maybe it was just a little outpatient deal.
Yeah.
All right, that's good. I was corrected. 18 snaps, I guess, for the first team. We'll get to that with Teresa a little bit later on. But 18 snaps for the first team offensive line and Erdogan's. Actually, Jalston Fowler, according to Mike Malarkey, missed a block and gave up that big hit on Alex Tanny. But again, I'm not going to get overly concerned about what we're seeing in preseason. I just am not. I'm resigned to the fact that it's too much. All right, there's more preseason action than we possibly need, and it's you're watching a practice. It's kind of like what Nick Saban said about Saturday. They struggled at times offensively, and they're working on getting the nomenclature down and getting the plays in and all of that kind of stuff. And Saban said, I don't think we had the rhythm that we'd like to see on offense. Brian Daboll, he says, I'm sure would say the same thing to you. I don't think that's a reflection on him. It's just the way it went today. He says, sometimes we have good days, and we've had some bad days. Today we made some plays, and we made some really good plays. But the consistency wasn't where it needed to be in terms of finishing drives and playing with the consistency. And there were a lot of good things to build on. Which is, that's kind of the way it's going to be. I mean, it's the first scrimmage. It's like a preseason game. If you were ready to go now, you wouldn't need practice. You got to think about that. He was asked about, getting the plays in with Daboll and a new system and so on. And he said, look, we do it every day in practice. We have team periods in practice where we put the coaches on the sidelines. We signal the defense and signal the offense. We call the plays that way every day. That's basically how we practice. So nobody saw the scrimmage. But what goes on in the scrimmage is the same thing that's going on in practice. It's a glorified extra long team period. That's all it is. You go team up for an extra long period of time. That's how that works. But they're doing it. They're doing it what they do. This is not like it's the first time they sent plays in. It's the way they practice. So he says that I used to get in the middle of it, coaching players all the time, when he scrimmaged and stuff back years ago. I used to get right in the middle of it, coaching players all the time, coaching them every play in the team periods. And then Bill Belichick used to kick me out and say, let the players play. There's a time when you got to let them play. You call it, and you have to, and they have to make the adjustments, and they have to do it. So we get that in the scrimmages, but we also get it in practice when we have team period. It gives the coaches a chance to practice what they're going to call situationally as well. So that's what he had to say about all of that, and it only makes sense. The players, if you don't want the players constantly looking to you to be told what to do all the time, this is what you have to do. You have to put stuff in. It's on film. You can correct it later. The time to be out there on the field with your guys fixing every little thing is during your inside drill, which is a 9-on-7 drill. And your individual drills and your half line drills. If you're working your linebackers and you're working a half line linebacker drill with the defensive line, in other words, you got a D end, an outside backer, a D end, a three technique. You might have a 3, a 9, an outside backer and an inside backer. If you're running their defense. All right. So it's a half line drill. And you want them to get their reads right and everything else and don't take false steps and so on. So when you're doing that, you're coaching the hell out of that. Every reaction, every step. I tell you one other thing that they do, and they do a great job of, and it's funny because I read it in the Phil Savage book, and they ripped this off. Everything in coaching is taken from somebody else. But they got this directly straight away from the Dallas Cowboys of the early 90s. When the Cowboys were dominant in the mid-90s, we all had this film. And they just happened to do it there every day. Those knots, the non-offensive touchdowns, return touchdowns, defensive touchdown. They call those NOTs, N-O-T, non-offensive touchdowns. You know, you coach the heck out of turnovers, but you coach how to turn a turnover into a score. There's a system there. It's not just luck. You do a drill. You do a scoop and score drill to where if a guy is in the open, and all you do is you do this in your everyday fundies. We used to call it the fundies. When you're doing your fundamental period, you do a turnover period. I did it when I coached D-line. I did it when I coached linebackers, did different drills. With D-line, I did a fumble recovery drill because there's a proper way to recover a fumble. When a ball is on the ground, you don't jump on the ball and roll over. You don't jump on the ball on your stomach because you're about to have 7,000 pounds of humanity on top of you. And you don't roll over because somebody's going to dig the ball out. When a ball is on the ground, the proper way to recover a fumble on the ground for a defensive lineman, an interior defensive lineman, is to slide into the ball in a fetal position. You cover the points. You pull that ball in. You suck your knees up to your chest. You get fetal. On your side, fetal. And then tuck your chin down into your shoulder pads, into your breastplate. So you pull your chin down into your breastplate. You pull your knees up as high as you can. You cover the points of the ball, and you're fetal. And you drill this. You drill it over and over again. You're doing left, right. You know, you got the guys, you're doing a grass drill, if you will. So you got them, you might have them on the ground on their all fours, and they're doing a grass drill, and you're working their agilities, and you're left, right, and the end of every line that goes through the agility group thing, instead of just, you know, waving them behind you and having them get up and run, you drop a ball on the ground. And you drop it near one of the guys, and they recover it in a fetal position, cover both points, pull your knees up, put your chin down. You put your chin down because somebody's going to grab you by the Adam's apple. You pull your knees up because somebody's going to grab you someplace else. And you protect the ball with 2 points because they're digging at it. And you tuck your head down, too, because they're going to get inside your face mask, you know, by mistake. I mean, it's bad at the bottom of one of those piles. So then with the linebackers, what you do is a scoop and score where you do a grass – well, you're not doing a grass drill, but you're doing a drill where you're moving them back and forth and back and forth. And then you just – toss the ball to one side or the other, and there's a way you don't bend over at the waist to pick up a ball to scoop and score. You squat, all right. You squat down with you bend at your knees. You squat down, neck up, back straight, ass out like you're taking a dump in the woods. You squat as you because now you can continue to run. You can't run bent over. That's how you see it. Whenever you see a guy recover a fumble and bend over on his head. That's because he was bent over when he didn't do it properly. You squat, you scoop, and then you're running. And there's a plan. You go to near sideline. Everybody who's on the defense knows the return is to near sideline wall to the inside. So now there's no confusion. Whether it's a pick, a fumble recovery, whatever, you set up an automatic return, just like a punt return. You bring the ball to the nearest sideline. So everybody knows that you're blocking to the inside and you're taking it down the sideline. These are drills. I was doing this stuff in the 90s. They're doing it today. Some teams do it more. Alabama does it every single day. And there's a technique to it. There's a technique you do. There's five different drills that you do. Turnover drills. You do the drill where the two guys, defensive backs, come in together. One guy secures the tackle. The other guy digs the ball. And it's the motion of you tell him you start the lawnmower. You ever start a pull string walk behind lawnmower, T-Mac? You know what it's like to reach down, grab that rope, and pull that rope?
Yes.
That's how you dig the ball out. You tell him, start the lawnmower now. Start the lawnmower. You reach in there, you dig, and you pull hard out. And then you have the punch out drill where you're coming from behind. And when you come from behind, you got one arm that goes over the shoulder of the player from behind, not grabbing the shoulder pads at the back of the neck. Cause that's a horse collar. You reach over the shoulder where you grab the shoulder. And with the other hand, you come with an uppercut and you punch the ball forward. And then you got the pursuit angle drill. And that's the one where you're coming on a 45 degree angle. And again, you reach across the player's back because you want to secure the tackle first. And with one hand, you reach across his back. And with the other hand, you go in that Lawrence Taylor swinging over the top swimming motion and try and swim the ball out of there. So these things are practiced relentlessly. Look at me start. I'm getting coachy, aren't I? T-Mac, just stop me when I get like that, will you?
Why?
Well, because I get real coachy. I get all fired up, and the next thing you know, I'm getting enough to talking about nines and threes and scooping scores and squatting and fetal position, and I just don't want to get, you know. I think that's boring for people. I don't know. But it gets me fired up.
Well,
I start getting fired up when I think about it.
You don't do it often. So when you do it, it's kind of like a breath of fresh air type of deal. And it's not like, oh, here he goes again with coaching us up again. Because you don't do it that often. So whenever
what if I did a Coach's Corner segment? See, now that would be too much. Like if I did one coaching tip a day and call it like the Coach's Corner segment, and we could play, like we could break out some music or something like that. And we call it the Coach's Corner segment. And I can X and O on the radio.
That sounds like you're about to lead a pep rally in the 50s.
No, this is the theme from Coach.
It sounds like you're about to lead a 1950 pep rally.
Come on, you never saw the show Coach?
Of course I've seen Coach. I know what
song from Coach.
It makes it sound like you're about to lead out Rydell from Greece into a football game.
Would that be interesting? I need to know. You guys let me know. I mean, I could diagram a play for you on the radio. Offensively, defensively, I could do that. One segment, 10 minutes, 8 minutes, 8 minutes, 6 minutes, 5 minutes. Coach's Corner, kind of like draw up a counter tray or how you defend it. Or I mean, I could do that. Or not. It's good breaking. We'll come back and get our first look at the update with T-Mac right after this on 730-1039.
Read the sign. Beware of dog. Tom Abraham is back.
All right, let's get a quick look at a Doghouse Sports Report with Tony Mack.
Right. Jarrett Stidham has officially been named the Auburn starting quarterback. Coach Malzahn, along with the official Auburn Twitter, tweeted the announcement this morning. Stidham started 3 games as a true freshman at Baylor with 1,200 yards, 12 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. Justin Thomas won the PGA Championship this weekend. The Crimson Tide alum shot a 5-under-66 on Friday to get him back into the mix. Heading into the weekend, where he shot a 69 and a 68 to finish the tournament with an 8-under-276. That gave the 24-year-old his first major victory. WWE Hall of Famer Ric Flair has been hospitalized and put in the ICU. Flair, who is 68, has been in the hospital since Saturday, where his representatives have pleaded for support. A 30-for-30 about Flair entitled Nature Boy is set to release on November 7th. I am Tony Mack, and that is your Doghouse Sports Report.
Yeah, that Nate story is a little bit concerning, man.
Woo!
Apparently he's had heart troubles and other issues. 68 years old. Not sure what's going on there. Might have to find out from like a wrestling insider like Smokey Mike or something probably knows what's going on. All right, get a break. We'll come back. When we return, Damon Amendolara is next right here. 730-1039. Dump.